much for joining us today, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're so happy to have you with us today. We're always having so many classes. You know, we have had classes, of course, on ground where we're outside and we're gathering herbal plants and we're making them into all kinds of medicine, and then you get to take that home for yourself. And that we've been doing, our class this year was our 47th year. That's right, almost 50 years in the field. And what's so interesting is we have been doing online classes already for the last 5 years. Now, of course, nowadays it's become quite the thing. So many of our classes and workshops have shifted to online, and they are available to you. So, you know, that's a really, really useful thing. You can just go to naturalnurse.com and then click on classes. Actually, click on calendar, because that's where we have a list of all our classes. And we have some coming up in the next few days, and really every day there are several online classes. So you can check in with us there. And today we are so happy to have as our guest a real icon in herbalism, and that is Susan Weed, who is a very, very well-known herbalist and loved and honored for her work, specifically with a focus on women's health and herbal medicine. She is the renowned author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, which are wonderful, wonderful books. I have many of them right here on my bookshelf, and they offer simple and safe alternative and complementary medicine. And she directs the Wise Woman Center. So I know they're open for classes. I'm not sure if they're on ground. We'll ask Susan about that. And she has 6 books, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Years, Healing Wise, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Breast Cancer, Breast Health, and Wise Woman Way Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, and Abundantly Well, which is a new and very exciting book. And you can find out more at susanweed.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Susan.
Green blessings. I'm so excited to be with you, Ellen.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us. And tell us, what's going on at the Wise Woman Center these days? Are you all, like, you know, down with masks, or are you still doing your outside work? What's going on there?
I am doing social distancing, not masks. I am holding all moon lodges and all classes. We had our Green Goddess Week, and there were 13 women gathered here for a week, and we were all safe and healthy. One of the women's husbands freaked out when she got home that she hadn't been wearing a mask for a week and that she'd been with other people, and hauled her off for a test, and they both came back negative, both his and hers.
Well, that's good. I mean, that testing is really,
we are making herbal medicine. We are gathering together, and because of COVID, I am offering for the first time a refund policy, which allows you to cancel even on the day of the event with a full refund.
Oh, that's a good idea. So you can feel like if you don't want to travel or whatever happens, you know.
Exactly. If something comes up and you think, oh, this is not going to work today, then you just get in touch with me and you get a refund or a transfer to another class, whatever works for you.
And where you are is absolutely beautiful. Like, describe what you're looking at outside in your center now.
I live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet where you can live. There's some very, very beautiful places, but you couldn't live there. But I live in the Hudson River Valley and the Catskill Mountains. The Hudson River Valley, Catskill Mountain area where I live is so beautiful that an entire way of painting has been named after this area called the Hudson River School. It's not a school. It's a way of painting landscapes that are so vividly alive that you think the fairies are going to leap out of the painting, grab you, and carry you off. And so that's what I'm looking at, is this wonderful view and the fairies who are lurking outside and waiting for us to come out and play with them.
So you're seeing fairies there, as well as all the fall changes in terms of the plants as they move into that sort of waning phase of productivity, which is really the best time to gather many different plants.
We're certainly seeing some leaves already changing, and especially as we come up to the equinox here in coming up in September, and since Lammas, the feast of the first harvest at the beginning of August, the light has been getting less and less. But once we hit equinox, where the day and the night are equal, then it becomes very, very noticeable that the nights are now longer than the days. And the plants, of course, respond to that. We've been having a wonderful, lovely, wet late summer. And what most people who aren't outside a lot don't really think about is that this is the time when the trees are actually making the leaves for next year, because they're forming their buds. And the leaf is going to be in that bud. And they're going to form those buds. They're going to hold those buds all winter long so that they can open up and flower and have leaves next spring. So the moisture at this time is so important to all of the trees. And I do live in a beautiful deciduous forest.
So, what made you go down the path, Susan, of being an herbalist?
My daughter needed shoes. I know that does not sound like much of a reason to be an herbalist, but let me explain a little bit more.
Please do.
I through a series of rather strange circumstances, wound up as a single mom. Not what I thought was going to happen, but that's what it was. And I knew that what was expected of me was that I go out and get a job, since I have a college education, and then pay a woman who doesn't have a college education to take care of my daughter while I'm out making money. But I have to say that it didn't make sense to me 50 years ago, and it still doesn't make sense to me at all. It's my child. I want to spend time with her. And so I made the rather strange decision to be a welfare mom so that I could spend time with my daughter. Now, there's adequate money on welfare to pay your rent and food stamps to get food and so on, but there wasn't any extra money. And my daughter is in her 50s now, and so this was well before imports from China. So shoes were very expensive. And as most children do, she was growing at a rapid rate and growing right out of her shoes. And I just didn't have the money to buy her more shoes. And it was a real panic for me. What am I going to do? I have to keep my daughter shod. And I was complaining to a friend of mine who said, "Well, Susan, what you should do is you should teach a class at a local community college. And, they don't pay a lot, but it's $25 a class. And, if you have a 4 week college." I
Susan,
never actually graduated from high school either.
Maybe the engineer will
left
be
high
able.
school to go to
Oh,
college.
there we are. Okay.
And this person said, "Well, it doesn't really matter that you don't have a college degree or a high school diploma, because what they're looking for is people who are really interested in what they're doing." So I applied to teach a class in bread baking. I was accepted. It was wildly successful. And my daughter got shoes. Meanwhile, as I was driving to town one day, I saw a woman standing beside the road. She looked like she was about 10 months pregnant, and she was holding a baby, and she had two huge bags of laundry. Now, there was only one thing to do in that circumstance, and we would all do it. And so I did exactly what must be done in that circumstance. I stopped. I put her and the baby in the car. I took her to the laundromat. We did all of her laundry. We folded it up, and I took her home. We became fast friends. We're back in the early 70s now, and she was married. And at one point, she said to me, "I'm going to kill him." And I said, "No, don't do that. What is going on that you want to kill him?" And, she said how he would come home from work and kick off his shoes and say, "What are you doing all day? The house is a mess." And, well, if you have two kids under the age of three, you know what you're doing all day and why the house is a mess. But he didn't. And I said, "What you need is to leave him alone with the kids for a while, and then he'll figure out what's going on." And she said, "He would never do that." I said, "What if you were making money?" She said, "He might fall for it if I was actually bringing in money." I said, "Well, then teach at a local community college." And she said, "I don't have a high school diploma." And I said, "It's okay. That's not what they're looking for." And so she decided she was going to teach about herbal medicine. And she did. It was a real success all the way around. Her husband figured out what she was doing all day and why the house was a mess. And it was so successful that they decided to go off for a big vacation after she had taught her class 2 semesters. And when it was time for her class to start again, she called and said, "I'm not coming home. You have to teach it." She'd recently died. And before she died, she called me and said, "I want you to know that I go to my death well satisfied, knowing that I fulfilled the task that I was sent here for, which was to get you to teach herbal medicine."
Wow, that's interesting. Isn't so roundabout.
Such a roundabout way. I taught that class, you know, 4 people in it, and I thought that would be the end of it. And now I'll go back to, you know, teaching the other classes, which were homesteading and mushroom foraging and bread baking and things like that. But no, the whole, as my mother said, if you had, you know, sat down and carefully chosen topics to be interested in, herbs, women, and health, certainly, you know, are topics that have gained a lot of interest over the time that you've been doing this. And that's what I've seen. And you know that my goal is to restore herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine.
And what do you mean by that, its rightful place as people medicine?
People's medicine, the medicine of the people. Many people, when they first encounter herbal medicine, as I did, are very put off by it because it seems to be very complicated. I remember opening Jeannie Rose's book, and the first herbal remedy in there had, I think, 16 or 17 different herbs in it. And I thought, well, I'll never be an herbalist. This is just too complicated for me. And the more I worked with herbs and the more I actually encountered people who were using herbs, the more I realized that although there's certainly nothing wrong with making herbal combinations, the real reason for making herbal combinations is to keep people away from herbal medicine, to make it too complicated for them. And so I have devoted myself to the use of simples, one herb at a time, and to the use of nourishing herbs rather than drug-like herbs.
So what is the difference now that you brought up something very specific? And that's a wonderful explanation about the different ways herbs are used. And you just talked about, Susan, something that would be nourishing versus, let's say, an acute situation medicine.
Certainly. I use herbs for acute situations, too. You know, I was walking barefoot in the grass, and I got stung by a bee or a wasp in the grass. And my granddaughter, who was with me, went running off. And I thought, oh, my goodness, is she disturbed that I got stung? And within a minute, she was back with a plantain leaf that she gave me. She was only 6 years old, but this is what I mean by herbal medicine being people's medicine. She already knew at 6 years old that if I got stung, what I needed was plantain, and we put the plantain on there, and it stopped all of the pain. But that's not an herb that is dangerous. That's a nourishing herb. Nourishing herbs can be used in acute situations as well.
Yes, both ways. And what do you mean by that? What is a nourishing herb?
A nourishing herb is, for instance, not cayenne. Or let me roll this back one level. One of the first things that I wrote about was the 3 traditions of healing: the scientific tradition, which measures and fixes; the heroic tradition, which cleanses and balances; and the wise woman tradition, which nourishes wholeness. So in the scientific tradition, we would say foxglove. Now, there's a plant that has some medicine in it. But as we know, if you take foxglove, you could actually die. It's very poisonous. And so it's turned into a drug so that we can tightly control the dose. And even at that, people still do die from taking foxglove glycosides, which are incredibly potent for the heart. In the heroic tradition, the herbs that we focus on are herbs that are cause a very intense reaction. The 3 primary herbs that are used over and over again in the heroic tradition are golden seal, cayenne, and lobelia inflata. And I started out, of course, using these herbs because they were the ones that were being taught, and I very quickly realized that golden seal tastes bad. Nobody wants to use it, and not only that, it's a plant that grows very far away from people, which already indicates to us that it does not want to be used. If we listen to the language of the plants, it's pretty easy to figure out which plants really want to be used and which you don't want to be used, and golden seal certainly does not want to be used. As a matter of fact, right now, there's so little golden seal because of over-harvesting and overuse that the herbalists of America are asking everyone not to buy wild golden seal, to only buy cultivated golden seal. And cayenne is, as far as I'm concerned, an addictive stimulant. And people are shocked when I say that, but I ask them to think about how cayenne makes their mouth feel, and they say, well, it burns, and I say, right, and it burns all the way through your intestines, and that means it's stimulating, and that's not very good for your intestines. And have you ever known anybody to say, gee, I'm eating too much hot pepper, I think I'll cut back? I mean, my brother is a hot pepper addict, and he needs his pepper so hot that he can't find any pepper sauce hot enough for him. He has to make his own, and he carries it with him everywhere.
So he's like a hot sauce addict.
He is a hot sauce addict. It is addictive.
Most so how do you feel about black pepper? Because
so
you're talking about cayenne.
Is on addictive herbs. Whereas in the wise woman tradition, what I focus on are nourishing herbal infusions, which is 1 ounce of dried herb brewed for 4 hours or overnight in 1 quart of boiling water. So I weigh out the herb, put it in a quart jar, fill the jar to the top with boiling water, stir it, add more water if it needs, put a lid on it, and let it sit overnight. It's not actually heated up for all that time. It's just sitting there for all of that time, steeping, because minerals, which are so important in our health, are very slow to come out of the herbs. It takes 4 or more hours for the minerals to actually dissolve out of the herb and come into the water. So that's why we're steeping it for such a long time. And I use a rotation of 5 different herbs, stinging nettle, the herb of energy, oat straw, the herb of strong nerves and good sexual functioning as well. Red clover, one of the world's leading cancer preventative herbs, and an herb that has just been demonized on the internet for no particular reason. There are no estrogens in plants. There's certainly none in red clover. It's in the bean family, and there's as many phytosterols, which is what's in plants, not estrogens at all, in beans or carrots as there are in red clover. And no one is suggesting that a woman with a diagnosis of a breast cancer should avoid eating carrots. As a matter of fact, many books strongly urge women with a diagnosis to eat carrots. So red clover, very important, nourishing herb. Linden. You know, most people have heard a whole lot about turmeric and turmeric's anti-inflammatory qualities. And the real fact of the matter is that I have rarely met a person of European extraction who gets any anti-inflammatory relief from turmeric at all. And one of my herb rules is don't ever take herbs in capsules. When you take an herb in a capsule, you are taking the herb in the most dangerous possible way. And you are taking the herb in the least effective way. And you are taking the herb in the most expensive way. So there's really no reason at all to ever use herbs in capsules. Instead of turmeric, what I suggest is linden, a wonderful anti-inflammatory, very much geared for European extraction bodies. And I've seen it work very, very well with African and tropical extraction bodies as well, except in areas where turmeric is eaten as part of their food 3 to 4 times a day, cooked in ghee and then cooked into the food, but never taken as a pill. So linden flower, not only is it anti-inflammatory, it is a wonderful mood improver. It's renowned for making one smile. And comfrey, another herb that has been very demonized. And I even have friends herbal friends that go around bad-mouthing me because I use comfrey and I recommend comfrey. And I say to them, you know,
I think comfrey's fantastic.
Yeah, I would be happy to, you know, take your considerations to heart if you could show me anybody who's ever been harmed by comfrey. Do you know anyone who's ever been harmed by comfrey?
It really was, you know, you probably know, it was research that was done on a very concentrated isolate in very high amounts on rats that led to comfrey being, you know, misaligned that way.
So those are my five nourishing herbal infusions. Comfrey, as I say, only improves the strength and the flexibility of the ligaments, the tendons, the bones, the skin, the mucous surfaces of the reproductive, respiratory, and digestive system. Oh, and there is a special protein in comfrey, and I am using comfrey leaf, not the root. There's a special protein in comfrey that aids in building short-term memory. So lots of wonderful things from comfrey.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, Susan, can people buy comfrey on the market, or do they have to grow it?
They can buy comfrey. It's for sale. For years and years and years, I've been buying comfrey and totally ignoring the warning on the label that says not for human consumption.
Right. Like people do that with goat's milk, right?
Exactly.
They actually have goat's milk, and it's illegal to buy it if it hasn't been pasteurized. So it just says for animal consumption only.
Right. And then you have to say, oh, bah, or whatever, right?
Yeah, so you have to know the workaround. Because comfrey used to be in the marketplace, let's say, that you could just buy it as an herbal remedy, but I think now you can still buy it as a dried herb.
Yes.
Not made into a remedy. But when you're making your recipes, you use the dried herb and your
own. Only, exclusively, yes.
Because you're not a fan of herbs that are already in bottles. So why don't you tell us why you're not?
I'm not totally clear what you mean by that.
Okay, commercially available.
I do make tinctures, tinctures do come in bottles, and I do use fresh plants when I make the tinctures. And there are some things, for instance, I'm not going to be making a nourishing herbal infusion of poke root. I'm going to be tincturing that poke root. I'm going to be harvesting it as the weather gets cold. I generally wait until after there's a hard frost and the top growth of the poke has died back. And then I harvest that root and tincture it and use that tincture in 1 to 3 drop doses. And, of course, this is one of the things that tinctures allow us to do is to take tiny amounts of the herb or to preserve an herb that might be difficult to get. When I first moved to my land, I was thrilled to see that pennyroyal was growing here. And I spent an afternoon going out and harvesting pennyroyal and had just a wonderful time doing that. And I spent, 3 or 4 hours and I harvested maybe 4 ounces of fresh pennyroyal, which dried down to 1 ounce. I said, wow, you know, I just spent 4 hours of my time harvesting 1 ounce of dried pennyroyal, and it's not even going to keep that long. And so the next year I went out, I spent 1 hour, and I harvested enough to make a pint of tincture, and I still have most of that pint of tincture. So I preserve herbs by making tinctures of them. I would not use pennyroyal as an infusion because you don't ever use a scented herb for a nourishing herbal infusion. Scented herbs contain volatile oils. Those volatile oils, when concentrated, like brewing overnight, become very harsh on the kidneys and the liver, two organs that we always want to protect and really take good care of. And that's also, of course, why I would never use essential oils, because essential oils, as far as I'm concerned, are drugs.
So you mean essential oils that are, let's say, commercially available. Would you ever use oil to soak your herbs in for a preparation?
If I went to a willow tree and I extracted, the active compounds from the willow tree, including salicin, and then if I took that salicin and I concentrated it, and then I purified it, I don't think anybody would mistake that for an herbal remedy. They would understand that I had taken the willow tree and made a drug out of it called aspirin. And that's exactly what we do when we make any essential oil. We're making a drug from the plant. It's no longer herbal medicine. It's now a drug. And essential oils, if you've ever spilled an essential oil on a finished surface, you know that they eat away at anything that's oily, and they will actually take the finish right off a finished piece of furniture. If you spill an essential oil on something plastic, it will dissolve the plastic. And that's exactly what happens in your body. If you inhale essential oils, or if you shampoo your hair with a product that contains essential oils, or if you use any kind of shampoo or body lotion or toothpaste that contain essential oils, those essential oils go into your body, break open your cells, go into your cell, and destroy the mitochondria, which is the energy-producing body of your cell. They're drugs. They're not safe.
Well, that is very interesting because, as you know, aromatherapy and essential oils are actually becoming more and more popular. But you're saying that's not the best way to go with your herbal medicine.
If you, I ask for years for people, how many pounds of lavender is there in a 1 ounce bottle of lavender oil? And the lowest number that I got was 1,000, and that's from lavandin, a special kind of hybrid lavender that has a lot more oil. But the usual figure was between a ton and a ton and a half of lavender and 1 ounce of lavender oil. That's a real hassle for the earth. But instead, you could buy a lavender plant, and you could have that lavender plant in your room, in your bathroom, in your massage place, and you want the scent of lavender, you rub your hands on the lavender, the whole room is filled with the scent of lavender, and you can use it over and over and over again. Isn't that better for the earth than using essential oil? I love aromatherapy, but natural aromatherapy, not drug aromatherapy.
So true. Well, Susan, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I want to remind people you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we're here with our herbalist specialist today, Susan Weed, who is the Wise Woman Herbalist and author. And we'll be coming back with more very shortly. And stay tuned for more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaparin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sauce Sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. So get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com. Right there is a way to contact The Natural Nurse, which is yours truly, Ellen Kamai. Or you can go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Facebook, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And of course, you can comment there and join our, you know, I think we have about 6,000 likes or whatever people do over there. So you can join that and then you get a lot of information about what's coming up in our many workshops and books and teachings that we do, as well as, of course, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z radio show, which you're listening to today right here on Progressive Radio Network with our guest, Susan Weed. So, Susan, in your books, you discuss something called the three traditions of healing. Can you share with us what you mean by that?
Yes, we did briefly talk about it before. Most of us are familiar with the scientific tradition. And, of course, like most people in the industrialized Western civilization, I grew up with the scientific tradition. I went every year for my checkup, and the doctor did things to me that no other adult did, tapped on my knees, looked in my ears, and so on. And at the end of all of this, would turn to my mother and say, she's in perfect health. So I learned the first most important thing about health, which is I have nothing to do with it. It's in the hands of the experts and the adults. And then after declaring me to be in perfect health, I was given a shot. And so I learned the second most important thing, which is in order to remain healthy, you have to use drugs. And I would say that that's where people who are involved in the scientific tradition are today, is that they believe that health doesn't have anything to do with them, that they simply go for a checkup every year and the doctor tells them whether they're healthy or not. And if they're not, then they take drugs. And, of course, now we have gotten to the point where we not only treat diabetes, we treat pre-diabetes. In other words, somebody we think could get diabetes. We not only treat elevated blood pressure, we treat pre-hypertension. So more and more and more people are taking drugs with the idea that drugs are somehow preventative. A drug is not preventative. It's not preventative medicine. Preventative medicines make you healthy, and drugs can never make you healthy. In the scientific tradition, we measure, and we have to measure up. But then we want to ask ourselves, measure up to what? And the truth of the matter is that the measurements have almost exclusively been done on young white men. So we're supposed to measure up to what a young white man is. And, I mean, this is even something as simple as having your vision checked. And your vision is supposed to be 20/20. And that's the letters that a 20-year-old young white man can see at 20 feet. That's what 20/20 means. But maybe I don't want to see that way. Maybe I want to see the way a 74-year-old white woman sees. Maybe you're a person of color. Maybe you're an indigenous person. You know, maybe you don't want to measure up to what a young white man is. So women and people of color and minorities, of course, are severely underrepresented in scientific studies. 20 years ago, there was a mandate out that more people of color and women and indigenous people had to be included in the studies. Nothing much has happened. So, do we want to measure up? It's a good question. Do we want to be fixed? I don't think so. In fact, I think fixity is the opposite of health. For myself, the scientific tradition failed me because I had bladder infection after bladder infection as a child, and they gave me an antibiotic that turned my pee bright orange. And when I went to college, I met a woman who told me that that antibiotic could actually cause kidney failure. And that my backache, that when I woke up in the morning when I was 16, was because my kidneys had been damaged by this. It was startling to me. And So I also discovered that I had gotten pregnant while taking birth control pills. And so I vowed at that point, and I was 19 years old, not to use drugs unless they were absolutely necessary to save my life. And that was the beginning of my interest in herbs and herbal medicine. I was living in Manhattan. I went to the Manhattan, you know, main branch library and got all four books they had on herbs. I've now written six. And, you know, I was introduced to the alternative medicine, which I call the heroic tradition. Now, balancing and cleansing, which is the active verbs in the heroic tradition, sound pretty good. We should be balanced and we should be clean. Not if we want to be alive. Let's make a little balance experiment. Inhale. And hold your breath. Now you're balanced. Now you're balanced. I didn't say you could exhale. Once you exhale, you're not balanced anymore. So we can see that life is inhaling and exhaling. It's a dynamic disequilibrium. Balance is the step that immediately precedes death. E.O. Wilson, a man still alive, considered smarter than Einstein, says that the only planets that will ever support life are planets that are not balanced. Earth supports life because our axis is tilted, because of the dynamic disequilibrium. E.O. Wilson goes all the way back to the Big Bang, which we have pretty good evidence of, and says that if it was just a Big Bang, the universe would just be a solid field of hydrogen. Nothing would be happening. But there was a perturbation. The balance was broken. A perturbation came in that started a spiraling swirl, which caused the hydrogen to come together, forming stars. Those stars were nuclear reactors that created other elements. They lived out their lifetime, exploded, and sent those other elements out. The swirling and dynamic disequilibrium continued until at last there were dust clouds around the stars and planets began to form. And wow, here we are, all because there was a perturbation, because balance is the antithesis of life. If we want to be alive, we never want to be balanced. Would you like to go out with me and clean up the forest? Let's pick up every pine cone, every stick, and every leaf off the forest floor and clean it. What will happen?
That's we'll a die. Great example. That's a really great example.
We'll die. Clean is code for damage and destroy. Every time you do a liver cleanse, you're damaging and destroying your liver. I once taught in an herbal school where the owner of the school was very much into liver cleanses. Most of her students were in their 20s, and she demanded that they all do a liver cleanse. And that person who was the in charge of the clinical herbal studies there told me that over 25% of those students wound up having to have an emergency gallbladder removal because of the liver cleanse.
So what about, you know, I've been thinking about that because of what's going on now and everybody cleaning everywhere all over the place with 10,000 tons of, you know, these cleanser things that are in bottles that they pump out, which of course a lot of them have toxic chemicals. And what about the over-cleansing of microorganisms, which allows more aggressive ones to grow?
Exactly. There's a really fascinating book that just came out. I think it's called Dirty, but I'm not sure about the title. Anyhow, it's written by an MD who decided to stop showering. And, you know, his wife, when asked, how does he smell? He smells just fine. He smells like a human being. Right? And he says, you know, once he stopped washing, his skin became incredibly healthy. He says, I still get in the shower and put water on myself now and then. He said, but I don't use soap on my body anymore because I understand the damage I was doing to myself with that soap. In fact, we have not been able to establish that COVID is transmitted through surfaces.
Right, that's questionable. But they're overusing all those cleansers everywhere. You know, everywhere. And
little,
I think just like
little
results,
because it's not cutting down on COVID. Your better result is to social distance and to, you know, continue to take care of yourself in your own home. At wisewomanschool.com, I have a free course on the best herbs for preventing and dealing with COVID.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so that is my
tell us gift. Tell us about that again. I want to make sure everyone heard that.
Sure.
It would be a wonderful way for them to get great information and introduce themselves to your work at the same time.
Right. That's wisewomanschool, wisewomansquilt.com, and you just go to wisewomansquilt.com, and you'll see the course on herbs for preventing and dealing with COVID right there, and it's absolutely free. You don't have to pay a cent. There's no trick. We're not trying to get you in any way. We're actually giving you that course because I want herbal medicine to be people's medicine. I want you to feel like you can easily and effectively use herbs to protect and help regain your health.
So that is great. Now, what about things, you know, that we might not think of as herbs, but actually, you know, you might explain to us, Susan Weed, that they are herbs, like coffee, tea, and chocolate.
Well, as a matter of fact, this past winter, I went to spend some time with my daughter, who has a home in Costa Rica. And we did a course, which is not for free. You'll see it at thewisewomansquilt.com. And it's called Treasures of the Tropics. We go to an organic coffee farm. As a matter of fact, we've pulled out. We had such a good time at the organic coffee farm. We stayed there 2 days. And we have pulled out the coffee part, and that is offered as a separate course if you just want the coffee part. We also went to organic cacao farms and saw how they made the chocolate. We went to organic sugarcane farms and worked with organic sugar. We went to organic pineapple plantations. We just had a wonderful time with all of the tropical herbs, tropical treasures, just as you say, that people might say, well, those are foods, but of course, in the wise woman tradition, food is our medicine, and our medicines are foods, and I don't draw such a strong line between food and medicine, because the wise woman tradition focuses on nourishment. We want to nourish the wholeness of the unique individual. Each one of us is unique. We are unique in how we metabolize things. We are unique in our tastes and our cultures. We are unique in what pleases us and doesn't please us. And the wise woman tradition says all of these things are important. If an herb tastes bad, that's a very strong indication that your body is saying, this herb is not good for me. The heroic tradition, of course, runs on the belief of no pain, no gain. But the wise woman tradition says, no pleasure, no treasure.
That's a good way to say it. So therefore, things like coffee, tea, and chocolate would probably fit in, but they truly are plants, and they really are herbs. Of course, they could be overprocessed, and like you said, you visited organic farms, which is very different than what happens to commercially available coffee, which is so highly sprayed.
Yes and no. The people on the organic farms, some of whom don't have organic certification, said that in the tropics, the people who come to look at your farm to see if it's organic or not come one day out of the year, and that you can basically tell them anything. So they do not feel that anything that's really organic from the tropics is truthfully organic, and that's why they don't go for that certification. And what they say is know your supplier. And what we found was you can't know your supplier when it comes to tropical products. You know, we were very impressed with the organic pineapple, and we said, how do we get this? And they said, you can't, because the only a big business that will buy our pineapples is Dole, and they mix ours in with theirs, and they use horrible chemicals. And I said, so if I buy pineapple, it comes through Dole, and it could be either something that's grown with chemicals that are actually injuring the workers, or it could be your organic pineapples. And they said, that's right. The only real organic product that you can get from the tropics is bananas. And this coming winter, if travel opens up, we're going to do Treasure of the Tropics Part 2, and we're going to go look at banana and coconut and avocado and a variety of other healing foods.
Oh, that sounds really wonderful. And, you know, I know one of your favorite plants is stinging nettle, but we're going to take a little break right here so that our wonderful program, which is Progressive Radio Network, where we are airing today, has all kinds of fantastic shows, including The Gary Null Show and many, many other wonderful shows that you can listen to. So we will be right back when we come off this break, and we'll continue our discussion with herbalist, master herbalist Susan Weed. You can find her at susanweed.com, and she gave you other links as well, so that we'll mention that again, where you can find her free COVID course as well as many of her books and all kinds of information. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station. Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Where, oh, where can you find the mind, heart, and soul of the progressive consciousness? The Gary Null Show is where. It is America's number one ranked progressive radio program, and Gary Null is the most comprehensive voice of the progressive enlightenment. So you can hear it all right here. Weekdays, noon to 1 Eastern, 9 to 10 Pacific, on PRN.FM, the number one progressive station, the Progressive Radio Network.
G is going to shut down our calcium channels. What are we going to be like without calcium channels? Listen to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. Stay with PRN and hear the latest scientific studies and discoveries about vaccine on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back once again, right here on Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're here every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. But one of the wonderful things of Progressive Radio Network is all the shows are archived. So if you hear something today that you want to catch again, you can always visit the archives. Or if you'd like to share this with a friend who wasn't listening today, they always can. And of course, we have, I think, about 400 or 500 shows on this particular archive. So you can even Google a topic and find a show that you want to listen to. So thank you so much for being here today as our guest, Susan Weed.
Yes, I am so thrilled to have this opportunity to talk to everybody and to open up the ideas of the wise woman tradition, the third way of looking at health and healing, the way that looks at health and healing from the perspective of wholeness. And a hologram is a very interesting kind of image. If we take a hologram, which is a picture, and we cut it in half, we don't get two half images. What we actually get are two whole images, each half the size of the original one, and with a little less definition. So we can't be less than whole. We are always whole. We are always perfect, exactly as we are. My new book, Abundantly Well, talks about the seven medicines, so that if there's a disruption to health, we can have a course of action. The seven medicines are serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, and lifestyle medicine. And I call those the foundational medicines. Those are medicines that we want to engage in every single day. And then there's a gap, and that gap says, stop, watch out, you're about to go into dangerous territory. And the last three medicines, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and deep medicine, save our lives but always injure our health. They are wonderful to have. I personally was wheeled into surgery the middle of May, and they operated on me for 17 hours. They then put me into an induced coma for 13 hours. I, of course, came out of there unable to walk, to hardly able to turn over in bed, and recuperated in the hospital for 2 weeks and have been recuperating at home. But I am completely cancer-free. There was no spread of any kind, which I told them there wouldn't be. There was no involvement in the lymph nodes, which I told them there wouldn't be. And they got clear margins, so I'm not even set up for scans, for looking as far as they're concerned. I don't have cancer. Thank you for deep medicine. I use all of the medicines. I'm not the kind of herbalist who says doctors are bad and herbs are good. No, herbs are wonderful, and I use them. And that's what got me at 74 years old through such a, let's face it, grueling ordeal.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I know that you, there are some people who talk about the fact that the only way to be healthy is only to eat all raw food. And what is your teaching on that, Susan?
There is nothing on this planet that eats raw food. Nothing. Let's take two sunflower seeds, a roasted sunflower seed, and a raw sunflower seed, and plant them. And we're going to plant them the same depth. We're going to plant them in the same place. They're going to get the same amount of water and the same amount of sun and the same amount of, ooh, 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 I love you. And after 2 weeks, what we will see is that one of those seeds has sprouted, and that's the raw one. And what happened to the cooked one?
I don't know. What happened to the cooked one? Nothing much happened.
Well, what happened to it? Is it still just sitting there in the soil? Or did it decay? Did it become food for microorganisms? Even microorganisms will not eat raw food. That's why raw seeds sprout. Nothing on this planet eats raw food because there's not a single bit of nutrition in raw food. And people say to me, don't your goats eat raw food? And I say, you go out and you be with those goats and you watch what those goats are doing. And you will see they bite, swallow, bite, swallow, bite, swallow. They're not going to waste their energy chewing raw food because they know they will get nothing from it. All of those bites and swallows go down into the F-O-R-E stomach. They don't have F-O-U-R stomachs. They have one F-O-R-E stomach. And that four stomach is a cooking pot. And the raw food that they have eaten is cooked at fairly high temperature. You put your hand on the belly of a goat who's eaten a lot. It's hot. And then she'll go, and she coughs up her cud. And if you sit next to a goat who's chewing her cud, it smells just like sauerkraut because it is fermented greens. And there are five ways to cook. We can apply heat. We can freeze. We can dehydrate. We can ferment. And we can cover in oil. So it may look like that goat is out there eating raw grass, but that goat can't get any nutrition of any kind from the raw grass. It has to ferment it and cook it. And then, and only then, does it chew it and put it into its actual stomach. I was very privileged to have a veterinarian student in her last year come to do her externship with me. And so I really picked her brain about horses. I said, now, horses don't have a rumen. I said, so how do they get nutrition from their food? She said, well, it's one of the reasons why there's so many horse vets, because horses have a very hard time getting good nourishment. And over 90% of what goes in the front end of the horse comes out the back end of the horse. And if you're a gardener and you've ever used horse manure, you know that's true. It is just as weedy as can be. It's just filled with weed seeds. And she says, so a horse will die if it's not given hay, which is dried food. And remember, dehydration is one way to cook the food. So horses as well only survive because they eat cooked food. They appear to be eating green grass, but they're getting virtually nothing from that. And as a matter of fact, they can actually die from that. It's the hay and the dried grasses in their natural environment, where people aren't making hay, that keep them alive. And at the risk of perhaps slightly offending some of your listeners, and I hope not, I'm not intentionally offending you, people say, well, surely your rabbits are eating raw food. And I say, well, the rabbits are caprophages, and that's a fancy scientific word for eating your own feces. If you buy a pet rabbit, they'll be very clear with you in the store. Do not feed your rabbit raw food or it will die. Because nothing on this planet, except for a few misguided human beings, eats raw food.
So that's really interesting because, of course, there's whole movements in eating only raw food.
Well, if you go to YouTube and you ask for the raw versus cooked debate, you will find me debating one of these proponents who says that we should eat raw food. And as a matter of fact, Brigitte Marr is a very good friend of mine, a wonderful herbalist. And we were going to sell the video and, you know, make some money. But when I saw the rushes of the video, I said, I love Brigitte too much to put this out on the open market. But what happened was the videographer posted it on YouTube, so it's available to everybody. And you can see how unhealthy she looks. As a matter of fact, she was hospitalized within a year of making that video with me. And the doctor said that if I had not made her promise to eat a quart of yogurt every week, she might have been dead.
Well, you know, there's individual differences, but certainly, you know, you're certainly right that in nature we really do not see, and among humans either, other than people who make a conscious decision to do it. But talk about your radio show and your YouTube channel, because we're getting close to the end, and I really want people to know how they can get in touch with you and, you know, learn more from you going forward.
Thank you. You know, the scientific tradition, you pretty much, you know, it's locked down. You need to spend a lot of money, get a license to get into the scientific tradition as a healer. The heroic tradition, you have to really study a lot, and it's kind of frightening and a lot of stuff to memorize. But the wise woman tradition is based on herbal medicine being people's medicine, medicine being the province of the people. So I give away as much as I possibly can. You can go to SusanWeed.com, and I keep the sun in Susan, but we own Susan Weed and Susan Weed, so spell it or misspell it, you'll get to the right place. And there's, 5,000 or 6,000 pages of free information there. My blog talk show got started when my daughter had her daughter. And she said to me, she said, it's intolerable to me that you do consultations with people and you don't record them. And so now you're going to do a blog talk show and everything will be recorded. And like this show, my blog talk show, Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, is archived and recorded. And you can go there and just enter a topic. And because I've been doing it, as you have, for years, you can find what I have to say on just about any topic at all. And that's Tuesday evenings. You can go to my Facebook page, and it's always posted on Tuesdays, the number to call in. I answer people's questions for an hour and a half, and then I interview a person of interest for the last half hour of the show. It's very fun, and I'm so glad that my daughter decided that that was the way to go. She came home, oh golly, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago from her time in Costa Rica and said, okay, it's time to update you. And I said, am I getting a new hairstyle? Am I getting a facelift? What's happening? How am I being updated? And she said, no, we're not updating your body. We're updating how you present your information. And you're going to be doing videos now. And you're going to be doing lots of video courses. And this was the beginning of the wisewomanschool.com. You will find some of the courses that I've mentioned, my free course on preventing and dealing with COVID, my Treasures of the Tropics course, a wonderful course on adaptogens, a course called A Cancer Diagnosis, Help Yourself the Wise Woman Way, all of the information that I ferreted out, explored, looked at after my diagnosis. And actually, I had two different diagnoses 2 years apart, both cancers, which I found, two different kinds of cancer. The medical profession was just scratching their heads.
Okay, Susan, we do have to end here.
Okay,
thank you so much for all that sharing. And we are at the end of our show today. And you can find all those links at SusanWeed.com, plus WiseWomanMentor.com and BlogRadio.com. You can find /Susan Weed. And you can always get in touch with us here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z for more information about any of our guests. So thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And until next time, we're hoping that you stay healthy.